Hello and welcome. This is Corey Angelot. Welcome to the End of Slavery Summit. I am here with Jim Cost. Is that correct? Or yes. You go by James as well?
I go by Jim, actually. My friends call me Jim. So
Jim. Jim James. Jam. Welcome. We're going to be talking about moral education as the end to slavery. This is a really big topic, in my opinion, very important, because a lot of people don't look at moral education as being important. It's like, well, why talk about morality? Why talk about education? Why not just pass a law? Why not just, you know, write some scribbles on a piece of paper and say, this is what everybody should do? Nobody's going to listen. You know, people are too chaotic. So we're going to dive deep into what this means. But first, let's have Jim introduce himself.
Okay. My name is Jim Cost, as Corey said. I'm been a professional musician all my life, and I've always been interested in, self-growth, development, and, you know, everything about that. And I've always been interested in esoteric or spiritual knowledge, and I had been studying for a long time, but it really wasn't until I came across Mark Passio's teachings that things really changed inside of me. And the thing that really got me red-pilled, as they say, was I saw a documentary by Adam Curtis called The Century of the Self. And I started really researching that. It talks about, for people who haven't seen it, it talks about the complicity of the American Psychological Association towards the teachings of Wilhelm Reich, and it talks about Edward Bernays and advertising. And something really stirred inside of me. I was like, wow, I thought I'd, you know, was studying a lot of stuff, but to see how advertising and psychological manipulation, how this all played together, I really started on the road. And then I came across Mark's teachings, and, you know, I was listening to people like James Corbett, and I was listening to Richard Grove and Grand Theft World and Peace Revolution. And it really, you know, things really started to coalesce and, you know, really change within me. And then after I came across Mark's teachings, I'll admit I was resistant to it. I hugely resistant. Something in me really, like, was rebelling against it, but at the same time, I was really attracted to it. And I said, there's something really here. And I think I was really experiencing the kind of the destruction of my old belief system. It was already starting to chip away with me, you know, through listening to his teachings. And I listened to his podcast from number one to the current, you know, at the time what was current. And, you know, I, being a musician, I really, you know, we learn in pattern recognition and putting pieces together and organically synthesizing knowledge. So I was always disposed to that. So I applied my natural disposition in that way to Mark's teachings. And I just really found that, you know, I coexisted in a state of really rebelling, but really being attracted, and I just wanted to dig more and more. So the more I dug, the more I wanted to know. And then I think a lot of it, Corey, was that I thought, no, this can't be. The whole world, now everything I know is wrong. And I was really rebelling against that and thinking, well, the government's not here to help you, and all this kind of stuff. You know, I was really working on, really,
yeah,
on my inside. You know what I mean?
Hmm. So it's actually funny you mentioned music, because we were interviewing, Aaron and myself were interviewing somebody the other day, and they were talking about music as sort of a way to help free people and do the shadow work and help confront their feelings. And it's sort of reflective, like the music that they listen to is reflective to what they're currently feeling. And so, you know, and I could see music as sort of a form of education. They put a lot of different lyrics in it. It gives you a certain type of feeling. You might come out good. You might come out stronger. Like, let's say you're working out, you need to put on like pumping music. I feel like it's a form of education. You're helping your body know different signals, frequencies, vibrations, may you say. I think music is a very powerful tool. And then you mentioned advertising. I mean, that's sort of a form of education too, right? Because it's putting images and messages and symbols in front of people's faces. And some people don't realize what those symbols are doing to them or how it may be affecting them.
Exactly. Everything that you mentioned, Corey, is it hits people at a subconscious or preconscious level. Music, you know, the way that certain vibrational frequencies act upon different energy centers or the chakras in your body, you know, I mean, it's no accident that some of the music that we listen to nowadays, like there's a lot of the sub-bass frequencies can really hit people in the solar plexus or any different regions. And people even talk like some of the newer rap that's out, like some of the mumble rap with real subsonic frequencies can hit people at a really, some people say that it makes them actually physically uncomfortable. They feel like they're unsettled. And a lot of that is by design, you know, from what we know of what happens in the music industry, you know. And I know from my own personal experience working in it, you know, as well. It definitely can hit. Like the thing is, I don't know if you've listened to Mark Devlin at all, any of his podcasts. He's over in the UK, and he does a lot of research on, you know, he's got books called Musical Truth. He's got a whole series, and he talks about how the music industry has been co-opted, you know, by the dark occultists, and how it's an actual, you know, they've actually designed some of the music to hit people in really negative ways from vibration. And it's interesting because there's a keyboard player named David Sanchez who back in the 70s, he's a keyboard player who's played with all kinds of great progressive rock people. And he was Springsteen's first keyboard player. He talks about how he said there's a machine, a sonic machine that they use to create black holes. And he said now they can use something to create voids in the universe. Just imagine what you could do if you use those, but that same sonic frequencies for positive effects. So, you know, I as a musician have always been aware of this, you know, throughout my professional career.
I see. Yeah, that's amazing. That's interesting. I don't know much about that. I do know about the 440 hertz, you know, the 432 hertz. And there's music playlists and compilations on YouTube about different frequencies. And if you have a headache or you have some sort of condition, you just look up the frequencies.
Well, part of that is, you know, talking about the 432, the tuning used to be, you know, what they call concert pitch. You know, when you'd go to hear a symphony orchestra, the oboe would hit the tuning A. And before, I think it was 1941 or somewhere around there, it used to be that A, that concert A used to be 432 hertz. And 432 hertz mathematically works out to the harmonic frequency. Like there's a series of overtones. If you hit a note on the piano, it resonates. There's different overtones. And if it's at 432, it hits that overtone series naturally because the mathematical calculations of those frequencies, you know, lines up perfectly with the multiples of 432. Yeah. And when this changed was the Nazis actually had this changed to 440. And ever since then, they specifically did it to make people uneasy to change their vibration off of the harmonic frequency and to change it where you're off balance, you know, actually yeah. physically off balance, you know? So yeah, the tuning in frequencies makes a big difference in our physical well-being, you know?
Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, everything, right? I mean, the food we eat, the information we consume, it all plays a role, but people underestimate the power of music.
So, absolutely.
I agree. Yeah. So let's go now into the moral education, because this is the end of slavery, as you mentioned, right?
Yes.
So that means this is really particularly hitting at the root. So what does moral education mean? Let's break this down.
Okay. Well, I think you know, the way I look at it, something Mark said in the natural law seminar, the 8-hour presentation, he said that the 3D physical universe operates according to certain immutable principles. And if that's the case, if the actual physical universe operates according to those principles, why would there not be a correlation in man and the moral principles? There's immutable moral principles that exist as strongly as the physical laws. And I think that, you know, talking about pattern recognition and correlation, what, you know, I think our job, the first thing in moral education is, you know, people will say, oh, well, there's no such thing as right or wrong, and there's no such thing. You know, we can simply counter them by saying, well, okay, do you believe in gravity? Do you believe in the rising and setting of the sun? You know, all these different things. These are laws that exist in the same way. And we can say, okay, if you believe that these exist, why would it not follow that man has to live according to certain moral laws or principles, you know, designs for living? If, you know, let's say the person's uncomfortable with the term moral because they think Christian or, you know, some kind of repressive, whatever, to say, well, we operate under those same conditions to live, you know, to in harmony with nature, that we have to live by similar rules, but in the moral sphere.
Right.
So let's make that correlation, you know, so that people will realize, you know, that this does exist, and it's not, oh, you know, it's all according to your, you know, it's all relative. Because one more thing is that I think that people, when they say, oh, you know, there's no such thing as right or wrong, I think what people do sometimes is they confuse preferences with moral principles. And if we can get people to see the difference between those, I think that's a door into moral education to the average person.
Yeah. I totally agree. I mean, if you're going to end something, an institution like slavery, let's put ourselves in the 1800s and say, this is wrong. You know, somebody will say, well, I don't think that's wrong. It's like, oh, well, that's your opinion. But there's an objective effect right there to what's happening to that individual. They're being chained. They're being coerced against their will. Is it fair for them that you get to live your life and not them? You know, like just apply justice in both scenarios. See if it's reciprocal.
Yes. Exactly. That's a great point, because it's the idea of do no harm. You know, let's even take, you know, breaking down natural law. Let's just look at it as, again, to give people a doorway at, you know, to ask somebody, okay, do you believe in the golden rule? You know, that's pretty much natural law. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, on one very surface layer, right? Mm-hmm. So let's take it as, hey, how would you feel, you know, excuse me, put yourself in that condition of, if we were living back in the, you know, 1850s and, you know, chattel slavery exist, you know, was going on full force, to say, well, how would you feel if you were chained and not allowed to be free, and that you had to work in a cotton field all day, right, and you had to live in somebody else's house. You didn't even have a name that person gave you a name. You didn't even have your name. How would you feel? You wouldn't feel very free, would you?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it's a good point. And it's like, put yourself in other people's shoes, do unto others what you want done unto you. These are just different ways of putting it. And every culture has basically teached the same principle. Yep. I have a whole book called The Tao of Right and Wrong, which goes over quotations from every single culture, pretty much, showing that they all share the similar theme.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So this is a book by Dennis Danielson, Tao of Right and Wrong. It's helpful because it also goes into the school system and how it, from a young age, it's teaching kids ideas of moral relativism, or the idea that you can't really distinguish the two, and that it's all just inappropriate, appropriate, or this is more tolerable, but they don't get clear as to what is right and wrong.
Right.
And so it leaves the kid kind of confused when they come out of school and not really knowing. It's very interesting. I like the perspective, and I thank you for sharing that. So using this as sort of the end to slavery,
right,
and you helped yourself kind of understand this through morality.
Right. Yes. For me, I would say, like I said, because I have the type of, you know, mental disposition to make these connections and these parallels. It's something that I've always been interested in. Hmm. It's the way that my mind naturally works. So if I, you know, read a book, I want to know what books did that person read, whose book I'm writing, and where did they get their information?
Right.
And so on and so forth. So I would always try, and I'd say, okay, how did they get their ideas? What influenced them to write in this way? You know, so I would, you know, I always tried to draw connections and draw parallels, and to, again, you know, pattern recognition. That's the big thing for me, you know. So I really kind of pulled myself along in this way. But the thing that I didn't know at the time, I didn't know about how poisonous moral relativism was. I didn't know how deep the indoctrination ran, you know, right when, you know, say I was watching, you know, the Adam Curtis documentary, Century of the Self. It just awakened something in, an idea in me, just this little flame. And then I didn't realize how deep, you know, everything went, you know.
Right.
So then I would just dig more, and then I'd see how, I started to see more and more how deep all this went, you know,
mm-hmm.
and just kept, you know, making these parallels and making these connections. And, you know, the interesting thing is, it wasn't really until, you know, the nonsense, you know, March 2020 hit, that I really started to see the full impact of all this, and how that was really the thing that, you know, they were waiting for, to put all this into place. And I started to see all the people that I thought were conscious and knew things, you know, like my colleagues in the music industry, you know, people who were supposedly spiritual, you know, who did yoga or went to yoga retreats, to see how many of these people fell for the psyop, you know, and didn't really know these things. So people can have, I think the question maybe to ask ourselves is, okay, there are people who are searching, but why? What is it about those people? What knowledge do they not know where they fall for the PSYOP and we don't, you know?
Yeah.
And how can we bring that particular, let's say, skeleton key to the, you know, out to those people and to the world in general?
So would you say that is the moral education?
Yes, I absolutely would say it's moral education, because it's a combination of realizing that there's absolute right, there's absolute wrong. You know, that, let's take what the definition of a right is. You know, a right is an action that does not result in harm to another sentient being, right? So if that's what a right is, think of the fact that if you went out into the, you know, did a man in the street interview and you asked people, what is a right? How many people would be able to give the definition that I just did? Yeah. You know,
they'd be all over the place.
Right. They'd be saying, oh, rights come from government. Rights are in the
permission, privileges.
Yeah, exactly. So how do we get that information? How do we get them to realize that this is what a right is? And how can you fight for your rights, or how can you even know that your rights are infringed upon if you don't even know what a right is? And that's where the dark occultists have been so crafty, in that they've taken it, you can't fight for something that you don't know what it is, you know? So we have to bring that to people so they can actually know, this is my rights and God damn it, I'm going to fight for them. Right. You know, like with what's going on with, you know, so-called gun control. Even people who are pro-gun, a great majority of them don't realize guns are A, for self-defense, B, they're to protect from tyranny. They're to protect, it's not only physical self-defense, but it's to, before even that, it's to prevent, you know, being well-armed is to prevent somebody from, you know, from coming and chipping away at your rights. You know, you have to be well-armed psychically and mentally, as well as with actual physical firearms.
Yeah. I was just going to mention another experiment you can do about that is you can ask people and say, well, do you trust the government? Well, then who's going to take the guns?
Right. Exactly. Right. Or also, if you say, okay, you trust the government, okay, you know, it's not only you're going to trust, you know, like you said, who's going to take the guns and what are they going to do with them? And are they going to protect you in the way that you think they're going to protect you?
Right.
Because people have this idea, because they themselves are well-intentioned, that the government is equally well-intentioned. And they cannot fathom that the government does not have their best interests at heart. Or if they think that, okay, the government doesn't have their best interests at heart, i.e. that we are going to make the government, you know, that, okay, they're going to infringe upon our rights. Okay, now how deep does that infringing go? It just doesn't go to the fact that they steal 30% of the fruits of our labor through taxation, and that we get taxed at every point. It goes far deeper than that. Hmm. You know, just, you know, look at what happened in the past 2 years, and people don't realize how this connects. They think, you know, the people who believe in the PSYOP think, well, oh, you know, the government's just, this is just, you know, the CDC or whoever has my best interest in heart, but they don't realize that they, not only do they not have their best interest in heart, that they're actively looking to kill them.
Yeah. You know? Our freedoms are going more away. They're not becoming more abundant.
Right.
It's becoming clear.
Right. And that's because we don't have the moral education and we're not living. If you're not educated in something, you can't put forth those practices. You can't be moral if you don't know what moral is, you know? So, I mean, some people have an instinct to know, hey, I know not to harm another person. But, you know, I think most people, if you're not a psychopath, have that. But I think the fact of, you know, the fact that people are essentially de facto Satanists, you know, that they're in it for themselves, that they don't realize that their actions, you know, impact what you, how you act impacts upon everybody else. It doesn't, it's not just you.
Hmm. Yeah. So what would you say to the individual who says, well, no one's going to listen. If you try to educate people, it's not as impactful as writing something in legislation because people are just never going to listen. They're never going to learn. They're never going to be moral. So that justifies the law. What would you say to that individual?
Well, I'd say, why do you think people are not going to listen? That would be the first thing. What makes you say that? I would ask them why do they believe what that, you know, and try to understand that and deconstruct that belief, mm-hmm. you know, because a lot of this is, you know, our impulse is to hit people when we gain a certain amount of knowledge. We want to give that knowledge to people. And sometimes we're like a fire hose, you know, and we just spill it out to them and they're like, whoa, hold back, you know, they're like, whoa, that's too much. You're too intense. You know, just, I think the thing is more asking people and keeping, you know, trying to create a dialogue is a good way to try to get to the root of things and to try to use logic, you know, which is another thing that people don't. There's a big boy coming through here. I think that's the thing to understand is that how can we get to the root of what a person's belief is? You know, why do they think that way? Get some kind of a dialogue and then to kind of follow it through a logical train of thought where, you know, here's another thing. People are now, you know, they're through public indoctrination. People are not being taught through logic or critical thinking. They're being taught through emotion. You know, everything that's going on now with the whole trans movement and, you know, the guns and everything, you know, you even listen to, you know, some of these radio show hosts, they're all talking emotional. And then people are just parroting what they're hearing, but they're parroting the emotional thing. They're not looking at what's the logical basis for what this person is saying.
Right. It's like, I yawn, you yawn, I sneeze, you know, you sneeze, I drink water, you drink water, you know, you laugh, I laugh, you know. It's kind of a conditioned society. Everybody kind of parrots off of one another. It's not a bad thing. It's because we all are connected. But if we're not conscious of that connection, what's going to happen? It's like it's like a Wi-Fi signal that's open. Everybody soon is connecting onto your Wi-Fi and soon all of a sudden you have no internet. You know,
they're all glomming onto it, you know, and everybody gloms onto the same thing. They go to, you know, where a certain kind of energy is or the loudest voice or because they
the sheep all jump off the hill.
Right. You know, it's lemmings. They're all, you know, I'll give you an example. Like, you know, my wife, before she goes to work, she listens to some Sirius XM. And we just do that because we like to, you know, kind of hear, you know, what certain people are saying. And it's, you know, we notice that people like, you know, Andy Cohen or, you know, these people that they have on this you know, these certain stations, you know, are pushing the agenda. Like they're all saying, oh, I got my monkeypox vaccine and I just had to go all the way to Queens, but now I'm safe, you know, and they're putting this out to an audience of listeners who go to listen to that person because they have interviews with celebrities and they're pushing that agenda. So a person is going to, who doesn't know, is going to listen to them and say, oh, well, Andy Cohen got his monkeypox vaccine, so I should get mine, you know?
Yeah. Even if they don't say that, it's in their mind because it's somebody they listen to on a day-to-day basis.
And they trust that person because that's their voice, you know, in their car going to work. So we have to combat that and, you know, combat that programming and saying, well, why do you think that's important? Why do you think that's going to, why do you think this thing is going to protect you? Why do you think this outside agent is better than your own immune system? Hmm. You know, yeah. You know, just it's simple questions to say, well, why do you think that? Or even like, well, you know, it's really, you just say, wow, they're putting mask mandates back in California, but you know, COVID cases are going down. That's really strange, right? You know, just even something like that to kind of get them to thinking. And you don't always have to, if it's somebody that you see on a casual basis, then you know, you could do something like that. But I think that our goal is to really get out there and put things out on the airwaves to counter the voices of the CNNs, you know, the Andy Cohens, the Howard Sterns, you know.
So all these- have you had success with educating people in real life, would you say, with people that you know with this moral education?
Some people, you know, I have to say that at the beginning of all this, I was so outraged at everything. And I didn't really, you know, I wanted to fire hose people.
Right.
You know, and that would kind of turn people away. Now I just kind of ask them in the way that I've told you.
Makes
I've
sense.
I've asked them in ways of saying, well, why do you think that way? And I think that in that way, on a one-to-one basis, I'm having some degree of success. You know, but I don't think it's the only thing that any of us can do. Like what you're doing is fantastic. You know, your platform is really growing and, you know, you're putting the content out there. And that's what all of us need to do, because we need to make that voice louder. Mm-hmm. You know, the voice of truth, the voice of reason, the voice of true spirituality, the voice of true moral education.
Yeah.
You know, all that's really the way to counter all this. And it, but the thing is, I think that what the problem with a lot of people is that, you know, I've noticed I have a core of people that I myself hang out with who know, you know, who are pretty, I hate to use the term awake, but they pretty much know what's up, mm-hmm. you know, but I think certain of these people are almost going into what's called black pilled, and they're feeling like, oh, well, it's all going to shit. You know, Klaus Schwab and those motherfuckers are going to take over anyway. It's only a matter of time. And I'm like, no, you know, I'm saying that's one scenario. You know, it's up to us to do the best that we can in making our voices louder through multiplying, through being out on the airwaves, you know, being this way, more so than I think that, you know, talking to people and being man on the street or other, you know, kind of approaches I think are important, but they're not as impactful as getting out there. That's why, you know, I'm doing the weekly, you know, roundtable with my friend Mark, and, you know, I'm going to be starting another solo thing. I just put up a BitChute channel. I'm going to be starting something in about a week or two. I'm just preparing some material. And I'm just going to talk off the cuff for now, but try to do it in a way where, you know, talking about the pattern recognitions to get people to really think about it in a different way, to try to take the information that I've learned and to get people to think for themselves, you know, to put the information out, but to really think in ways, you know, that we have to do the heavy lifting ourselves. And I think one thing that we have to contend with, Corey, is that we have to contend with the fact that your average person, you know, they go to work, they come home, they're tired. What do? They turn on CNN or they turn on MSNBC or they turn on Fox and they let that wash in, which is really lethal because they're already tired. So their subconscious is open. And TV, you know, mentioned talking about music and frequencies, TV operates at a certain frequency band that hits people at the super conscious level. So therefore that stuff is all going straight into them, you know, right. And they're not even processing it. They're just swallowing it whole psychically.
Yeah. You know? So I think the alternative would be to introduce the moral education, the other forms of knowledge, right? And you provided for our audience some resources. Aleister Crowley, Liber Oz.
Right.
Lysander Spooner, No Treason, The Constitution of No Authority.
Right.
Larkin Rose and Lysander Spooner, Do Not Vote. And The Trivium, The Classical Liberal Arts of Grammar, Logic, and Rhetoric.
Right.
I actually have that book as well in book form.
Yeah.
The Trivium.
Yeah, I have that in both forms. The wooden books one with the green cover, you know, there. And the Quadrivium volume is also fantastic, too. I have that both, you know, hard copy and online. And I think, you know, one thing that we who are putting the information have to realize is that, okay, we didn't come to this point of the knowledge that we currently possess. We didn't come to that all at once. And we've had to, you know, we've had to combat, you know, decades of programming, you know, from the time we were young people, you know, children and through our young adulthood and so forth. You know, we've had to combat, you know, being indoctrinated through television, through the, you know, public indoctrination system known as education, you know, and through social mores, you know, so-called social mores are more, you know, that's not really moral education as much as it is the hive mind kind of concept where people think, oh, well, you know, when something becomes, it's like a fad that becomes really popular. Like, you know, for the early 60s, it was people, growing up with the Beatles, you know, for 50s people, it was Elvis, you know, 60s and 70s, you know, it was various people, Led Zeppelin and rock people up through disco and everything through music. And then through things like, you know, counterculture publications and, you know, things like that were kind of, you know, really gave people sort of social mores, you know, through, you know, the upcoming generation. And I think the thing is, we have to dispel all of that and get to the foundation of moral education.
Right. And doesn't Led Zeppelin have an album cover that says Do As Thou Will from Aleister Crowley?
Yeah. Yes, they do.
They knew some of that. It's quite interesting.
Well, Jimmy Page was a huge acolyte of Aleister Crowley. But he took more of Aleister Crowley's lifestyle as an emulation rather than the core principles of his teachings. And I think many people don't really understand, you know, you find this in even the so-called truth movement. There are people on the supposed right-wing side of this that say, oh, Crowley was a Satanist. He was this, that, or the other thing, you know, or the Kabbalah is evil or Freemasonry is evil. And none of these things are evil in and of themselves. They can be used for positive as well as they can be used, they can be co-opted by the dark forces as well. And it's our job to de-occult them, to make people see that, oh, you know, Crowley wasn't, you know, like he was, it wasn't the Crowley of Diary of a Drug Fiend as much as it was the Crowley of Thelema and Liber Oz. And the fact that, you know, these teachings are so heavily encrypted, as is the Christian Bible. There are people who don't realize how encrypted the Christian Bible is. Like most people, they say, oh, 666. Oh, that's scary. You know, instead of the fact that it means the three, you know, it's three aspects of man. It even says in the book of Revelations, this is the number of man, not of a man. And 666 only means that the three areas of man, you know, that which are embodied as the Trinity, are not at completion. Six is the number falling short of completion. Seven is the number of completion. Eight is the number of self-realization, you know, and nine is the number of Godhead. So people don't realize these things, and then you're going to get whole folklores based on the fact of 666. But then that doesn't mean that the dark occultist can't encrypt that signal and put some dark energy into that and make the 666, you know, as a psychic tool towards other, you know, towards the masses, you know.
And that just shows you that education goes way deeper than we think. You know, it's not just black and white, like, oh, I open up a book and I start reading. Like, it's everywhere. Food, it will educate your body too, right? If you eat certain foods, it conditions your body into eating more of that type of food or being more used to it.
Right, exactly. And that's a great point, because you can't, so many people who think, you know, like the people who believe in the COVID psyop, they look at, oh, if I just wear a mask and get my shot, I'm going to be fine. But then they're eating McDonald's, you know, 7 days a week, and they're killing themselves slowly. They're cutting off their breathing. You know, they're putting more bacteria in their body through wearing a face diaper.
Their own prescriptions.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I read someplace, I think it's that people, I think even, I don't know whether it's after 50 or after 40, that they are taking at least 5 prescription medicines or more. And then when you get over 60, I think it's 8 or 9.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah. And the amount of vaccines as well has increased, tripled over just the last 20 years.
Right. But it's more than 20. It's actually 30, because from really, you know, now when I grew up as a young person in the 60s, we only had 3 vaccines. But then after 1986 and the, you know, the vaccine, you know, the act of 1986, I forget the exact name of it, but the one that mandated that, you know, vaccine companies are no longer liable for injury.
Right.
Post 1986, I think it was like 1991 that they gradually, the schedule increased. Like 1991, I think they increased to 7 or 10. And then every couple of years, it started ramping up to the point where now I think there's something like 72 vaccines that a person gets up to the age of 18. And I'll say this, I've noticed that, you know, because one of my jobs as a musician was I played for arts education in the New York public schools. And I noticed these kids would come in and they'd have all kinds of allergies and autoimmune disorders and everything. And these kids were vaxxed out the wazoo with just the childhood schedule. You know, these kids, like, you know, we never, when I was growing up, we never had peanut allergies or anything like that. Now, kids can die if they have peanut allergies because of their autoimmune systems are shot from all these jabs they've been
getting. Yeah. And they're a kid too, so they don't have much education on their hands. It's unfortunate, right? So they get people when they're weak or when they're young, or it's, and that's how they become more of a slave. If you're born into a slave family at a really young age, you think you're meant to be a slave. And sort of, we talked about that before. It reminds me of Stockholm syndrome.
Oh yeah.
You know, the idea that's like, oh, I like the person who is ruling over me. Oh, I want somebody in that position. So when we talk about moral education, I like to compare it to political education or political action. So, and actually there was a text written in 1803 or in the 1800s by a man named Aidan Ballou. And he was an abolitionist and anarchist. Such as myself, right? I call myself an abolitionist as well.
Yeah, I love that designation. That's awesome, man.
Yeah, and because it puts the focus on morality, right? So he actually wrote a whole text called Moral Power versus Political Power. I'm just going to read a little quote from it, if you don't mind.
Please.
Yeah, so it says, moral power is putting forth mighty energies to abolish slavery and elevate 4 million of degraded beings to the rank of manhood. That's, of course, all of us at this point. It is exerting its multiform influence to regenerate a corrupt public sentiment and to superinduce a will in the people of the United States to let the oppressed go free. Political power hinders and obstructs the progress of this reform by every means possible. It is wedded to slavery and will uphold it till a new public opinion compels it to stand off. So that was him talking about the chattel slavery at the time in the 1800s and how political power was essentially connected in that in order to free the slaves, you couldn't participate in politics. They didn't do voting or anything like that. They educated people. And that's what ultimately led up to the end of slavery. They didn't want a war either. The government stepped in to act as the victor. And we talked about that in the history with other people. But it's amazing because Aidan Ballou and many others, he was part of the Non-Resistance Society. They were just educating people exactly in what you said, moral education. And that changed the whole public opinion. And from there, because that was changed, everything else was becoming changed.
And is that, I want to write this down. Aidan Ballou, is it B-E-L-E-U?
B-A-L-L-O-U.
B-A-L-L-O-U.
Yeah, he even actually tried making like little utopias. I mean, you say people might call them utopias, but free towns. Where he worked together with people and said, this is separate from the government towns. We're going to treat people with respect here. Yeah, they did a lot of things in the 1800s that people don't always look at. But they worked hard. They really stood their ground and walked the talk. You know, they weren't just saying it. They weren't just pushing a narrative.
Action.
Right. And they were going as far as pacifism. Do no violence at all. Not even in the case of self-defense. Because they wanted to be seen as a moral cause all the way. You know, they don't want any contradictions in the morality.
Right.
And that's where it's like, okay, well, civil disobedience, Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr., it could be helpful if you're in protest or with a lot of people, because if somebody starts something, it's like, oh, he did it, you know?
Right.
So, but in the case of it one-on-one, it might be smarter to use self-defense and to use your best judgment. They actually changed their minds later on once the slaves freed themselves from their masters. They're like, wow, that's pretty courageous. We can't say that was bad for the slave to do.
Right, exactly. And the name of the book, just because I want to get this for myself.
Yeah, it's Moral Power versus Political Power. It's an essay. I don't think it's a book, but you can look it up online and you can read the whole text.
Right, versus political.
Yeah, so it kind of goes alongside what we were talking about. And, you know, I refer to mental slavery as statism, right? So when you gave these resources for our audience, which I recommend everybody checks out, this goes deep into sort of that belief system or understanding the different aspects that consist of that belief system.
Right.
Because that is essentially what you're deconstructing by introducing knowledge, right? Because belief versus knowledge.
Yes. Absolutely. By the way, have you by any chance seen The Anarchists yet?
No, I have not.
Okay. Because that's something I think is a really beautiful thing, even though they're trying to make it into kind of a little bit of a soap opera-ish kind of thing, but just to get the principles of voluntarism out there, you know. And I mean, I might even do, once the series is over, I might even do a whole talk on it, because I think the fact that Larkin Rose had some videos out already where he talked about just the fact that this is out on HBO and they're letting people tell the story who are actually in the movement is really pretty amazing, that it's actually got this huge a platform. And I mean, the statists are going nuts about it. You know, all these people are writing articles like trashing this and everything. But I think it's a pretty amazing, it's a pretty amazing thing. And I think if it's framed the right way and people take the right lessons from it, I think it could be a really powerful tool.
Right. And that's the thing, like, we shouldn't be afraid to reach out and find out what opportunities we have to educate people.
I agree. It's important. I mean, I think the thing is, I mean, would you agree that it's like we really have to hit this thing on all fronts, you know? Yes. It, you know, and maybe it's not only putting out maybe a long form broadcast, but I noticed one thing that you're doing is you're doing shorts, you know, just like 1 minute blasts, mm-hmm. you know, as well. I think that's a fantastic idea, too, to just capture people, you know, as well. And, you know, the fact that you're able to exist on YouTube is pretty phenomenal, man. Mm-hmm. I commend you. That's a wonderful thing to be able to.
You follow the guidelines, you know, if you're going to be on the platform.
Right. But it's used. You're kind of doing a jiu-jitsu move against them, you know, using the platform subtly to put the message out there. And if people can.
Well, that's a good point, right? I mean, I have nothing against Google. That it consists of many individuals. If there's no violence and they're not, you know, a monopoly on violence like they are the government, they're just a corporation, and they're obviously competing, and they have a huge hegemony over all their competing interests. But right. In a free world, they would have a lot more competition, right. And they would have less of the ability to do what they're doing. The things that we say are harmful, like censorship. I will say there's a difference between influence and political power as well, right? Mm-hmm. Like an influencer, like just somebody speaking their mind and sharing education is different from somebody who's running for office saying, well, in order to change things, you have to vote me in. Like, no, right. They're not putting the education or the emphasis on the public. They're putting the emphasis on themselves, saying they need to be voted in for right. their own power, not the power right. of everybody right now.
Right. Well, here's a point. I think that, you know, let's just take how the average person looks at government, and people think, you know, we were talking earlier about how rights have, you know, most people think rights are granted by an external authority, i.e. the government, right? So if people think this way, you know, maybe another thing to think about is, okay, you know, you think rights are granted by the government. Well, okay, if rights are granted by the government, how come all these years that government has been in existence, how come not only has nothing changed, but how come it's getting even worse? Government is more corrupt. You know, they're not listening to the will of the people. Why is that? If government is supposed to be here for the people, why is it less of a force for the people now if it is, in fact, that force?
Mm. Yeah.
You know, like, you know, let's just hit people with logic to say, you know, why do you think that, you know, like Richard Grove says, you know, oh, they just want you to vote harder, you know, and I think that the thing is, maybe to think, you know, people think, well, maybe this time, if we vote these people in, we'll get it right this time. You know, everybody, it's kind of like, you know, the old Peanuts cartoon with Charlie Brown and Lucy and the football. You know, Charlie Brown keeps running up to the football and Lucy keeps snatching it away at the last minute. And he keeps thinking maybe this time she won't do it. And he still lands flat on his back every time, you know. That's kind of the analogy for, you know, what government really does. And to get people to really see that, you know, I think the fear, maybe the fear is that people don't see what the alternative can be to having no government. Like everybody says, you know, this is one thing my father said is he said, well, if there was no government, there would be anarchy in the streets, you know. It'd be like communism or something, you know. And, you know, so many people have this idea of anarchy where they think it's like Antifa, you know, the black masks and, you know, throwing the Molotov cocktails. And
as if they have no control over it themselves.
Right, right. Exactly. So I think maybe a part of it is to say that's not what real anarchy is. Anarchy, it does not, you know, it's like in math class, they had the equal sign with the line drawn through it, you know, for not equal to. It would be like anarchy does not equal chaos, you know. So to get people to really understand that, you know, but, you know, there's been so much programming in popular television series or the news that's, you know, not that, you know, we're fighting some embedded notions, but I think the idea is to say, what is, take the word, and means without, and archy, you know, archon, you know, masters, you know, so without masters, you know?
Right. Right, and people can't define these simple definitions, again, because the lack of knowledge or education, and that's what we're here to do. You know, we're here to educate people, so it's okay. You know, this is why we're here. We're humanity. We help each other out. We're not just here sitting on the guidelines going with the flow.
Absolutely.
You know, we're here to introduce what people haven't heard, what isn't being told to them, and therefore they can make up their own minds from there. We're not telling people what to think. We're helping them and how to think their own judgment, you know, a perspective you've never heard before, so you can have more perspective on your worldview. And so I would like to conclude with a final question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
How long were you a statist or an individual who believed in the legitimacy of government? If that's I like to ask people that question.
Wow.
Do you see, and how did you get out of that? And do you see any actions that independent media can take as a whole?
Yeah.
I know these are big questions, but
they are big questions, but I'll try to answer them point by point. Well, how long I've been a statist? Well, okay, I was in 1972, I was 14 years old, and I worked on George McGovern's presidential campaign at 14. And I remember that I always, you know, I felt, you know, always through the years, you know, I would, you know, I always thought, so we'll say from before I was 14 up until, you know, 6 years ago, really, because there was a point that I became more and more, I'll just tell you very quickly what happened to me was I grew up because my father was very conservative. I became more of a liberal and I became more radicalized through the years where I was a full-on socialist in, you know, my 20s, 30s, and 40s. And then I started to see kind of that there was something really, I don't know what it was exactly, but I started to see that kind of the thing that I was talking about that, you know, it always seemed like there was corruption. It always seemed like there was some kind of entity, no matter what, you know, whether it was capitalism, communism, you know, Fidel Castro, you know, communist Russia. I saw that and I started to think twice about being a leftist. You know, I always considered myself really progressive, but, you know, I think it wasn't until I started listening to Mark and Larkin Rose, you know, people like Keith Knight, and I listened to, you know, Ron Paul really kind of got me. I started to, the thing, I'll tell you what the thing was that turned me around. The thing that turned me around was a very simple logical precept, was that it didn't matter where the source, who was the source, or what side the source was on, it mattered if somebody was speaking truth. And I remember hearing some things with Ron Paul and saying, wow, he makes a hell of a lot more sense to me than, you know, the people, the Democratic Socialists of America, right? And then I started listening, and then, but then I heard Ron Paul, they said, oh, well, there were some racist emails. And right away I was like, oh, that doesn't sound good. You know, and I just kept, but then something said, something in me said, but wait a minute, he's saying these things that are really truth, true. So maybe I can just take what he says that's true and forget about the other things. Which, by the way, the racist emails were some kind of a PSYOP setup. So the point is that I could take that little bit of truth, and then I started to do more and more research, and I listened to thinkers on the so-called right and so-called left. And I found the more I listened, the more I listened to people, the more I looked for the truth of the message, and then I started to dislodge from being right or left. And the libertarian thing made more and more sense to me, and I kept going. But I said, well, wait a minute. If this much government is bad, then who's to say that this 20% that they still need is still good? So I kept going, and then I started reading more of Lysander Spooner, right, and more of the anarchists, and also the American Transcendentalists. And I started, you know, I read Malcolm X.
They're abolitionists as well, the Transcendentalists.
Right, exactly. And I started reading Letters of John Brown. I started reading Malcolm X. And I started reading these people who were definitely did not benefit from the American system, you know. And I started to see more and more people, like, I think Malcolm X really isn't given his due. People don't see how far outside of the system he existed. And when he divorced himself with the nation, from the Nation of Islam, he really started to open up then. And I looked at the logic and the truth, actually, in some of the things that Malcolm X said. And I started to see more and more that, hey, I'm really digging what Malcolm X is saying, but I'm also digging what Ron Paul said. Right. So wait a minute. So that means that this whole right-left thing is kind of bullshit. Mm-hmm. And then I started to dig even further, and I got to the point, once I started reading Lysander Spooner and Larkin Rose and people like that, I was done.
Right.
I was done with
What percent of slavery is not slavery?
There you go.
0%.
Absolutely. So
yeah, I appreciate you for joining us and sharing everything. And my final question was, what is there any actions you'd like to see in independent media? You know, is there actions that aren't being done in independent media? That
Absolutely.
Would be my final question.
Yes, I would say be very, very careful about not being discerning in how you put information out. Remember, I talked earlier about people who said, oh, Crowley, I don't want to know anything about him. He's a Satanist. You know, but then he had some of the most exalted writings in Liber Oz, which is why I picked that, because it's one page. And it's the thing that everybody uses that's so misunderstood. Mm-hmm. Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Love under will. You know, people do not understand. Do what thou wilt means do the will of creation. It doesn't mean do what you want. And he even says it in his writings. It doesn't mean do anything you want. So, but so many people, like I said, on the right, they'll just condemn Crowley. They'll condemn all these people instead of saying, well, wait a minute, there's some truth in what this guy's saying, and we can't categorize it so black and white.
Right.
You know, I would say, be more discerning, do more research. Don't just take something that plays into maybe some prejudices that you don't even know that you still have. You know, really, you know, we mentioned shadow work really briefly. I think this is an essential component. People have to do shadow work. They have to really deal with their shit, you know, and really deal with their personal shit. Because until you get a handle on the shadow side of yourself, you're not going to be a good vessel for, you know, disseminating truth. So I would say just use discernment, have, you know, examine your shadow side. Don't be afraid to always destroy your belief system. You know, we have to keep knocking our belief system down, and the learning just keeps going on. We have to keep knocking down our belief systems and burning out the vestiges of any beliefs that we still have that we may not even know that we have.
Right. No. I would love to see more of that in independent media. I'll tell you that. I mean, you know, we can be that change. We can be that independent media, but there's a lot of independent media out there that still focuses on news and other things. And this is powerful. This is important. And a lot of other speakers have talked about this. So if anybody wants to hear any more speakers like this and download your resources, go to nita.one/summit, nita.one/summit. This is the end of Slavery Summit. Thank you very much for joining me, Jim. I appreciate it. Jim Cox, could you share any links or all your channels?
Okay, right now I have a BitChute channel. I think it's Jim Cox 2018 2018. You can search for me there. I just have one video up right now. I'm also doing a weekly roundtable discussion with my friend Mark Tassie. He has a channel on BitChute called Tassie TV, T-A-S-S-I TV. And I'm going to be putting more stuff up on my BitChute channel, you know, starting in the next 2 weeks. And, you know, I'll be doing the weekly podcast until then. And I'm just going to ramp up the stuff. I'll also be publishing some writings as well. I'm putting together a WordPress site. You know, I'm just going to have some musings. But right now, I think I'm going to be concentrating mostly in the speaking domain, more so. And, you know, I just plan to grow. I've also, you know, I do have an album out. It's called Stone Church. It's with the drummer G. Calvin Weston, who's played with Ornette Coleman and John Zorn and all these amazing people. That's on Rope-A-Dope Records, and it's on iTunes, Bandcamp, all the major platforms as well. And, you know, my plan is to just put out more content. And for right now, BitChute and Mark Tassie TV and more to come.
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds great. Keep up the great work. I applaud you doing what you're doing. And I encourage anybody else listening to this to also take action on your behalf, and let us inspire you to hopefully take some action. And like he said, though, do the shadow work. Make sure you know what you're putting out there. And but don't be afraid. You know, be courageous. Check out all the other talks. I think this is all very powerful information. Thank you, everybody, for watching.